Greetings, this is James Gilliland, and I'm your host. We've got another great show. We've got Robert Stanley, and he's formerly a corporate journalist for Honda Research and Development in Torrance, California. Robert M. Stanley is currently the editor of Unicus Magazine, and he's the author of Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C., and is the host of the Unicus Radio Hour. He's served as a correspondent for America's Morning News, America's Radio News Network, and I mean, I can go on and on. He's worked in all kinds of countries and done extensive research into the ancient history and ufology, but I want to bring Robert on the show. Robert, are you with us?
Yes, James. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show. The main reason I wanted to bring you on the show was something that we both have a shared experience in, you might say. And that is the mainstream media and the UFO community as well, and just the censorship and the complete nonsense going on there. I'd love to hear some of your experiences and mainly what your take is on this.
Well, it as you know, this week I issued a statement that I'm retiring as a researcher of UFOs. Because, as you just pointed out, there is a tremendous amount of misinformation. There's a lack of credible evidence and a severe shortage of critical thinking when it comes to these matters. And I find that, you know, after 20 years of trying to make a difference in this regard, that I have had very little or no success. And in fact, I feel like in some regards that I've actually contributed to this problem within the UFO community of speculating too much and not analyzing enough. I mean, in other words, there's a lot of blame to go around. There's enough for everybody. I pointed fingers at the government, the UFO community, and the extraterrestrials themselves. I think that, you know, I didn't leave anybody out.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's been frustrating here. Thank God I've had a lot of backup, basically from the more benevolent UFOs here to back up, you know, the work that I'm doing. But as far as the bringing that into the mainstream media and actually getting a fair shake with that evidence, and then again, the UFO community, which is the worst censors of all, just the backstabbing and competition there. You know, it's just unbelievable. And, you know, and I get all these negative emails saying, you know, why are you being so negative? Why are you, you know, you catch more bees with honey and this and this and this. And I said, well, you know, sometimes you really got to address a very serious problem when it's in your face and you can't go forward.
Well, absolutely. And then, you know, I know you have photographs and videos just like I do, or I should say that I've acquired through various sources of UFOs in Washington, D.C. You've got them up there in Washington State. So coincidentally, but in itself is evidence, but it doesn't give you the whole story. And this is why I was pointing fingers at the extraterrestrials. I think they could have done a lot more. I've been very frustrated with the fact that they have done, in my opinion, not enough to give us information. In this day and age, when everybody does have a recording device, it seems to me that they should have had somebody should have had a contact where they could have actually recorded an extraterrestrial being giving an interview. And I know that's going to sound crazy to some people, but you know, if you look at the historical record, the way I've done over the years, I've had a chance to. You know, part of my research of Washington, D.C. was actually look through all of the historical records of UFOs on the East Coast. And there have been, allegedly been, multiple occasions in the past where UFOs have landed and people got out and they've had some sort of dialogue. So why did they stop? You know, unless people in the past were just misunderstanding or making it up, it seems to me that we should have had something like that occur and have it recorded on camera, you know, at least once by now. And instead, we've got a lot of misinformation or just outright fraud that's going on. There's, in fact, I just got an email from somebody the other day saying, gee, I'm sorry you're retiring, but here, look at my new book. It's got 32 photographs of, UFOs. And I said, what proof do you have? And she writes back to me, says, oh, I don't care about proving this to anybody. I just want to share my benevolent contact with the extraterrestrials and let everybody know they're here. Well, good for you, but why should I take your word for it? You know, I mean, and even if the photographs are authentic, getting back to my original point, that doesn't tell us anything about who built those craft or what their agendas might be towards us. I mean, I get really suspicious when people keep showing up and covertly like this, and they don't engage us directly. It's really very troubling to me.
Yeah, believe me, I've had my conversations and sworn at the heavens and the ships about this, myself, and have gone through this and they supposedly have their ways, but doesn't mean I agree with them. And it doesn't mean that I've been screaming at them, it's time for you to get your hands dirty, get down here. And a lot of us are here on the earth right now just getting hammered by everything you can imagine. Not just the nonsense coming out of the UFO community and mainstream, but psychotronics and psyops operations and everything else, doing everything they can to shut us up. But I understand your frustration being in the middle of it firsthand myself, and and I also wrote a letter of resignation to the UFO community. Stating about, I think it was about maybe a year and a half ago or two, might have been 2 years ago.
Okay.
Stating all of the reasons why, I was fed up. And I actually got a letter from a MUFON investigator who came to the ranch, and she has her own radio show, and came to the ranch, saw the ships. She said, there's at least 60 people here. The ships came in, they powered up, they made a nice turn. I made it very clear that they were not anything terrestrial, unless there was some major back engineering thing. I don't discount that.
Yeah.
But very clear. And she brought it to the MUFON director and said, hey, there's some crazy things going on there. I witnessed it firsthand. And he started yelling at her and saying, there's no way I'm going to involve myself with East City Ranch and yada, yada, yada. And just screamed her down. And she said that. She turned right then. She was pretty much resigned. She said, she goes, you can't tell me what I saw, and what, 60 to 90 other witnesses saw.
Sure.
So I think it's interesting here. It's a little different story. And I know you haven't had this as your experience, but we had almost 300 people here and did an intention experiment with Lockheed engineers who actually filmed it, and Boeing engineers and biophysicists. All kinds of people here at the time witnessed and filmed it. A lot of very famous people were here. Dolores Cannon, Mary Rodwell was here, William Henry, Lisa Renee was here. God, I can go on and on. Even sure. Bob Dean was here as well. The ExoPolitics people have all been here. Alfred was here. He just wrote an article about the intention experiments here. But, we'll have that many witnesses, films running, cameras running.
Yeah.
And then with Paranormal State, they came out and we told them exactly when and where the ships would appear. And they did appear exactly, to the second almost of when we said they would come.
Right.
And where they had their cameras rolling, got it all on film, and actually they aired it. So, and then we've had ABC out here, Fox News, I think it's KGW is coming out again. All the local people have come out and aired this, and then it aired one time and got crushed. It just got crushed, So the evidence we have, we even have Air Force Base commanders and air traffic controllers and pilots and triple PhD Boeing engineers all going on record and testifying of what they saw here. So we have the people, we have expert witness, we have the video, the photograph, everything together here. But again, it doesn't matter because it has been pretty much shut out of with a little bit of the mainstream, and the worst ones to censor it is the UFO community itself.
Right. Yeah, I understand. You know, it's just the way it's been, but I don't think it has to continue like that. I think, you know, we have to be, if we want, anybody really wants to get to the bottom of what's going on, there's got to be some criteria for validating experiences or evidence, you know, I mean, like a court of law.
Yeah.
You know, trying this in a court of public opinion, I think, is what we're really discussing here. Mm-hmm. And so far, it hasn't been executed very well, partially because of a lack of leadership. And this is just, yeah. I think, it was done deliberately from day one. I really think that the intelligence agencies have had a hand in mucking things up for us. But we also have to take responsibility for some of the egotistical nonsense that has been allowed to take place within the UFO community. And like I said, the extraterrestrials themselves, it's wonderful that they can show up on cue and do what they have to do in order to prove that they're here. But that still doesn't answer the question as to where are they from? Why are they here? What do they want?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, there is a possible answer for that. And from my understanding is, and to me, I don't necessarily agree with this either, but I do understand it. Mm-hmm. But the closer it gets to being undeniable, and especially if you have a piece of equipment that they left behind or something of that nature, the more danger the contactees are in. And it's a mess all the way around. And basically, it's because of our... I mean, we watch here the military chasing them on a regular basis, you know, vectoring in on them. The ships just blip out and they go, and the jet will turn around and come back in again. The ship just disappears, and a little cat and mouse game goes on for quite a while, and then they leave, and then the ships come back and reappear again. So I think there's several reasons why. One, that it's our aggressive nature and the way we're dealing with it. You know, shoot them down, back engineer the technology, you know, just pure ignorance on that part. And then the other side of it is the people on the ground. And you know, I can verify this from firsthand experience. And I think you can too, is look at what you've gone through with just your involvement in it.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what you've had to undergo. Now, can you imagine what would happen if one of them dropped into your living room and sat down and you filmed them and then put that out over the air? I mean, they would be all over you. And if you said you had a piece, an object they left behind, boy, I mean, I think from a higher intelligence, they would say, I don't want the karma of that. I don't want to subject this person to that experience, and we're going to have to wait a little while till this planet grows up.
James, that's I hear what you're saying, but that's still speculation. We really don't know this for a fact. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just trying to analyze a situation where we don't have all the information, because it's clearly not just one group, and they keep coming back. If it's so dangerous, why do they keep coming back? And we're also not addressing the fact that somebody's shooting them down, but it's not always us. Mm-hmm. They have some sort of internal conflict that's going on between the various groups. So I don't think it's fair that we're the last to know these things, or that we can't know them, or it's too dangerous. I mean, those are basically excuses for the fact that we're not getting the straight dope from the source. And I'll be the first one. If we ever get in a video of somebody being interviewed claiming to be an alien, I'm the first one to bring out my BS meter and say, you know what? That individual better have some really good proof of what they're saying. They're going to have to verify everything they're telling us. Otherwise, I'll be the first one to say, don't believe a word of it. Mm-hmm. We've been kept in the dark for so long now. I don't think we can afford to just take somebody's word for it because they step out of a saucer.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. You know, I always tell people that when they talk about this UFO enigma, you know, there's so many levels to it. There's malevolent ones, there's benevolent ones, there's time travels, there's us coming from the future back. I mean, all of these things are manifesting from what the evidence that people keep bringing out. If you look at all of it and put it together, not that I'm even saying that's real, but
well, yeah, because you called it evidence. Yeah. Let's be clear here; it's circumstantial.
Yeah,
most of these claims are unverified, and that's, you know, it's tragic, but that's what we're, and like I said, there's blame on everybody's hands here. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to take their own level of responsibility for the situation being what it is. You know, I put out the world's first poll for whether or not we should have contact with peaceful extraterrestrials. There was only like 3,000 people voted in 6 months, but generally speaking, the numbers were 80 to 90% positive, you know, mm-hmm. at least the people that were voting. Now, there were people that said no, or they didn't know, or whatever. But I, you know, that clearly 3,000 people is not enough to actually do. It gives you an idea, and I know, like, if ABC did it, then, well, it might actually have some more legitimacy, but mm-hmm. Because they're sort of, they're reaching a different demographic than maybe I am. I really don't know. I made it anonymous for a reason. I didn't want to spook people.
Yeah.
But, you know, the truth of the matter is you don't have to go to a website and vote whether or not you want to have, we should have, welcome extraterrestrials, peaceful extraterrestrials to visit us openly. Anybody can do that at any time. You know, it's telepathic. It's an empathic. It's, you know, they know what we're doing. They know how we feel. They know how we think. And to some extent, I would have to agree. I wouldn't want to come down here either if I was from an advanced race. I think, you know, it's hard enough just living here. I wouldn't, you know what I mean? It's scary. The things that people do. In fact, I think there was a case up by you recently where a man, his wife went missing and the police were watching him, and the kids were under custody, and he ended up murdering his two sons and blowing up the house with himself in it. And, you know, I mean, I know that's horrific, and I'm just using it to illustrate the point. It's not an isolated event. Unfortunately, people in this world are extremely violent. Mm-hmm. And so I remember there was a woman I interviewed years ago said that she had been in Bogota, Colombia when she was younger with her father, and she was abducted right out of the back of the Jeep. While her father was driving, and but these beings allegedly were not benevolent. I mean, were not malevolent. They were actually peaceful, and they were basically just trying to teach her some things, show her some things. I'm not sure exactly what the benefit was of it all, but they didn't harm her. Is the point of the thing? Mm-hmm. And they also told her that you wouldn't remember much of this for your own good. You're going to this is not going to stand out in your mind. It'll be just like you woke up in the morning, put on your shoes and had breakfast. It's not going to stick out at all. Mm-hmm. Of course, later in life, something triggered her to have the, you know, full recall, and it did frighten her. But anyway, she was asking them, basic point of my bringing this up is that she asked them at some point was, why don't you guys just land and get out and talk to people? And they said, because your people would shoot at us.
Yeah.
We're scared of your people. Well, okay, that's fine, but not all of us do that. And like I said, most everybody has cameras these days. So if the good guys really wanted to sort of end this crazy secrecy, you know, my slogan right now is disclosure without deception. Mm-hmm. We haven't gotten there yet, but I think we can do this. We're going to have to clean house first, though, and that means exposing everybody and everything that is simply not true.
Mm-hmm. Now, the deception part of it, going into that, you know, that has a long, long history, pretty well documented. Sure. Of you know, and supposedly, you know, there's we've had contact with ones that weren't as benevolent that had their own agenda. Mm-hmm. In the past with the government, and there's technology trades and genetic trades and things like that, a lot of experimentation going on. Now, if that's being the case, they would do everything they could to cover that up, even using lethal force, for two reasons. One, you know, they want the best technology in the interest of national security, because whoever has the best technology usually wins the war. And the other reason is, if the American people found out they were totally sold out and what happened, then for that reason alone, too. So obviously there's a motive there for, you know, keeping this thing going.
It's not that obvious, James, because everything you just said is, again, it's speculation. We don't know that to be true. Mm-hmm. It's out there. It's rumored. It's innuendos. It's inferred.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that's exactly the case. We, you know, like I said, in some regards, this is the old thing about the blind leading the blind. We really don't know these things. And look, I've seen all the rumors. I've seen mm-hmm. every last one of these things. Yeah. I've read them multiple times from multiple sources. But generally speaking, when it comes to the UFO community, it seems like the bigger the lie, the bigger the audience.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. And the more accepting they are of it, you know, and most recently was this character, not his real name, is Bill Wood. I mean, that's the name he's – Bill Wood what? Uh-huh. What, lied to you? He lied to us, you know. I mean, why? For what? To what end? You know, see, look, back in the 50s or 40s when this was still relatively new, you had a group like NICAP coming out of Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. And oddly enough, you know, there's military people involved in that, and one of them was the, you know, the first head of the CIA, yeah. Rear Admiral Hillenkoetter. You know, one of those guys I found to be quite fascinating was Major Donald Kehoe. Mm-hmm. It seemed like he wanted to tell the truth, but I'm not sure if he wasn't being misled either. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. he said that there was hostiles. Corso actually said this too. And I, you know, I don't doubt it. I, like you were saying before, there's probably everything you can think of, maybe some other stuff you can't even think of. Mm-hmm. They're just purely observers. But, at some point though, we do have to demand, evidence, proof, and we need to have it verified. So we have something to work with, because right now, like I said, the best evidence we have is photographic. But that doesn't tell us the rest of the story. So we're left to speculate and spin our wheels in all these different directions. And I mean, if we can't get past this, personally, that's why I retired. I'm out, because I just don't see, you know, I don't see any progress being made. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to waste any more time on this, because it's just a waste of time, really.
It does seem to be now the ball's in the ET's court, whoever, and it's their, I've always felt just recently, and this is just my own feeling, you know, another speculation, you might say.
Okay.
But I just feel I've done everything I could to get this information out, to bring out the evidence I have and everything else, right. And I've learned who's who. Mm-hmm. In the neighborhood, and who's going to bite your head off, stab you in the back, change your information. Mm-hmm. You know, I've gone through that whole process of seeing exactly, you know, and I'm sure there's some I don't even know about, like you're saying, lurking in the shadows there. But after going through this whole thing, I was looking at this and I said, you know, I feel like I've done my part. I've done everything I can to the best of my ability. And mm-hmm. and now it's up to the heavens, you know, it's up to them to sort it out, to decide, you know, what's going to happen next. And I have a strong feeling that's going to happen.
It could, but we still need to put our house in order, James.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
It's one of the reasons I agreed to do this show. And actually, I'm getting offers like you wouldn't. I cannot believe how many people want to talk to me now.
That's what happened to me, too. Same thing.
Yeah. Well, because they want to know, why are you quitting?
Yeah.
And I think I'm being straight up with everybody. It's mm-hmm. there's plenty of blame to go around, but we need to prepare ourselves to have an honest dialogue instead of a dishonest three-ring circus like we've been having with the UFO community. I mean, really, there's just too many people out there telling too many tall tales. Mm-hmm. And you know, that that isn't helping anybody. If anything, maybe it's helping the CIA, because I believe they kind of wanted us to believe that from the very beginning. That you know, oh God, it's like a puppy chasing his tail.
Yeah,
really. I mean, seriously, just people just spinning around in circles and getting dizzy, and you know, it's sort of infectious too. Mm-hmm. You know, the latest. Oh, did you hear? Did you hear this? And it, you pass it on, and you've infected somebody else with this. Stupidity. Mm-hmm. You know, there isn't enough critical thinking at this point. We couldn't take this to a court of law and win. And I think that's the model we need to start looking at. is how do we prosecute this case? Of course, it's not going to go to court unless some genius figures out a way to sue the federal government for damages on a class action suit. Mm-hmm. And I'm all for it. If somebody out there knows how to do that, maybe that would be the case. But you'd have to prove it. Now, how are you going to do that? How would you do that? Oh, I was abducted. Really? What proof do you have? Well, I got a puncture mark. Oh, so do millions of other people. How can you prove that was done by an alien? Oh, I've got an implant. Okay, you've got an object in your body. What is it? Well, we took it out, and it's got unusual isotopes. Great. Well, does that mean it's alien? I mean, is that actually concrete proof? Or again, are you speculating that's what it is? You know what I'm saying?
It could be our own government doing it.
We don't know.
Back engineered things or something. Who knows what it is?
Well, that's the point, James. That is the point. Who knows? We don't. The community at large does not. It has, like you said, there is no cohesion. There's no leadership. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what are we supposed to do here, honestly?
Yeah. I totally understand where you're coming from and mm-hmm. being in the same shoes. But on a lot of this stuff, I try to warn people. You know, there's people, like you're saying, they come out with these huge claims, mm-hmm. you know, of giant motherships here. And I mean, this has been going on, to my knowledge, since the 50s. To where, you know, max out your credit card, don't worry. The mm-hmm. mothership's going to pick you up. The earth is going to flip over and be cleansed. And so, you know, no worries. And a lot of people have did that. And then they did it again in the 70s. There's a big wave of that going on in the 70s. And now a lot of them are starting this same program up now that, hey, the mothership's here. It's going to pick you up. No worries. And I've heard all these, you know, crazy stories.
Yes, and we're all going to ascend. Well, most of us who choose to do so are going to ascend to a higher dimension, so why worry? Mm-hmm. Again, maybe that would be wonderful, but the fact of the matter is we're here now. We're faced with some very, very serious issues, and I mean, outside of aliens, although I do think, as I pointed out in my second book, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C., no one was more shocked to read that conclusion than myself. I didn't see that coming. But it's clear to me that there are these malevolent beings among us. Call them demons or archons mm-hmm. or whatever. They are here, and that they are they have this covert agenda, and they apparently have, whether it's technology or advanced mind control, whatever. Mm-hmm. They have the ability to take over people's minds, and key individuals in Washington, D.C., in my opinion, are possessed. I mean, that's the Catholic Church's term for it, but they're essentially puppets, and they probably are unaware of it. And I say that based on the boy that was the case study for, that became the movie in the book, The Exorcist. It's a 13-year-old boy in Washington, D.C. in 1949. He didn't know what he was doing. During the daytime, he was completely normal. He had no knowledge of what was going on at night. And in fact, at night, I don't think he had any knowledge either. I don't know where his consciousness went, but he clearly was not in control. Mm-hmm. It was some other entity that took over. So, I understand that the government, on some level, military intelligence, knows that channeling and remote viewing can be a viable means of getting information, mm-hmm. but it's typically unreliable.
It's also remote influencing and influencing from the negative side of things. And so, and so you might have, 50% or 70% of truth in something. And then you have that 30% of nonsense in there, which is basically how the disinformation campaign works. You know, they'll give you a major portion of truth in the information. And then when they want to spin it in a certain direction, then they add that little spin in at the end.
Well, the Gnostics were pretty clear about this, that we've been invaded, and that everything about society, and especially the Catholic Church, had been infiltrated or orchestrated to in such a way that it was an illusion. It is essentially the Matrix. You mm-hmm. know, the movie they called it the Matrix. They said that, the storyline was that we're like batteries, right? Biological batteries.
Oh, yeah.
But in reality, my understanding of it is that these beings actually do draw energy from us, but not to power machines. It's to actually – it's something that they feed on and are it's like a drug for them.
Yeah.
So this is part of the attraction here, allegedly, for the bad guys being here covertly, is that they're actually gaining something from us, which makes them stronger and, of course, makes us weaker. So, you know, I think I made that case pretty well recently, because I was surprised when I put out the press release. People, you know, gradually said, yeah, okay. But then I announced it on Coast to Coast, and a lot of people went to look. Of course, I've also discussed it with Alfred Weber. He's posted it up there. So by now, months later, I think it's November. So, yeah, a few months later, I've gotten dozens of emails from people from around the world who said, yes, I've seen these things. I know they're real. Thank you for bringing it up. Mm-hmm. I'm talking specifically about this non-human sort of amoeba-like creature. I mean, yeah. It's not small. It's a very, you know, I guess they come in different sizes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I call them a mental parasite in that regard, because they somehow have the ability to insinuate themselves into our consciousness to actually influence us to do things that generates even more negative energy. Mm-hmm. For example, I heard on the radio today, sorry if I'm freaking people out by talking about this, there was a girl who is arrested and sentenced to life in prison. She was a young girl who murdered her friend next door because she says, I wanted to know what that felt like. And she said it was absolutely thrilling. She says it was, you know what I mean? So is she just mental? Well, her lawyers say, oh, she's taking Prozac. Well, God, if that's what Prozac does to you, I think we should take that off the shelf.
I think but we should.
It's not Prozac. It's these mental parasites. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, that's what the Gnostics said these things do. It's what the Toltecs claim that these entities mm-hmm. do. They are, and of course, they're not the only ones. They're part of a larger group. As it said in the Bible, they are legion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a hierarchy among them. So they basically, a lot of different negative groups are in some rough form in an alliance that you know, where they can take things from us, including you know, this negative energy that's generated when we have anger, fear, greed, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And there's plenty of it here. So it's, you know, one of the things I'd said that got people's attention when I was on Coast to Coast was that we don't have to feed these creatures.
Yeah.
Once we're aware of the fact that they are actually provoking us to do this for them, we can just say no. I mean, I know it's easier said than done, but I would encourage people, when they do feel negative emotions, recognize that it's not only bad for your health.
Yeah.
To get upset, it's actually making things worse for us as a species here, because it's feeding the puppet masters, the mm-hmm. archons, our overlords, the, you know, the evil overlords.
Whatever you want to call them, yeah.
Yeah, well,
there's so many different names for them, but they, you know, every culture has a name for them, it seems like, and every religion has a name for them.
Right. But, you know, I think in recently that there's been in the press, there was a thing about Gabriel Amorth. He's the lead exorcist for the Catholic Church, allegedly. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what he calls himself. I don't know. Apparently a lot of people dismiss him. But, you know, he said that the number of exorcisms or possessions are on the rise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's not a good indication of anything. So I do think, like I said, we have to address this. We mm-hmm. being not just you and me, but mankind needs to wake up and recognize that we're being manipulated on all fronts by the government, by the extraterrestrials, and the, you know, I hate to say it, but the UFO community hasn't helped itself at all. Mm-hmm. And, it's no wonder people look at it as being just a three-ring circus, because essentially that's really what it is. If you just want to use it for entertainment, God bless you, you know, that's fine. But I actually was working within that community trying to professionally make a difference mm-hmm. and sort of bridge the gap between the UFO community and the mainstream media. And, you know, I caught a whole lot of ridicule and flack from people on both sides of the issue, because they're sort of at odds with one another. Mm-hmm. And Of course, the government, like I said, isn't helping whatsoever. I know they've got their own agendas, good and bad. Because I had a conversation with a dear friend of mine. He's a semi-retired spook, and you know, he tries to mentor me. I mean, I like him. I really like this guy. He's a dear friend, but. You know, I have to take everything he says with a grain of salt because I don't know who's listening or why he's telling me what he tells me. And it's not like he tells me secrets, okay? Mm-hmm. He sort of advises me or has tried to advise me like fatherly advice over the years. Mm-hmm. And so he got my notice that I'm retired now, and he says, well, you know, he's just trying to give me this speech. Basically about, you know, you can't expect people to do things that they're incapable of. And he'd also told me in the past that the public really can't handle the truth. He says, you know, that's why we keep secrets, is because they, you know, it's not that they're not trustworthy. It's that they will basically blow everything out of proportion and take it the wrong way, because there isn't. Look, we're very polarized. I mean, he says it's on every issue. It's not just UFOs. He says, mm-hmm. You look at any issue, healthcare, you know, finance, you name it. We have a really difficult time agreeing upon anything. So it's really no surprise that we have no cohesive unity when it comes to discussing UFOs or extraterrestrials.
Yeah, there's a... If you want my opinion on that, I think that that basically what you're saying is true about the you know, the archons and all the other nonsense going on, mm-hmm. and I think that most of these politicians have, I mean, their main focus is, you know, power and wealth basically, right. And it's usually over others. It's not a service oriented consciousness, which makes them right. susceptible to these darker energies.
That's right.
And at the same time, though, that one of their jobs is actually to keep the fields down on the earth, to keep it in a level that they can operate. I mean, if everybody's loving and joyous and walking in their own self-authority and choosing not to participate in any of this nonsense, any of the wars, any of the separation games, they couldn't exist. You know, they couldn't function here. Their whole food source would be gone, you might say. So...
Right.
So as a whole collective, they're trying to keep this down. And I think there's other forces out there that are in the opposite camp, trying to raise everything up, trying to empower people and to awaken, maintain their self-authority, use, you know, some discernment and just operate under basic universal principles or universal law. I mean, Jesus laid it out to us. He said, you know, love is the ultimate law. Basically, that's the bottom line. On those two laws lie all the laws and commandments. Love God with all your heart and love your neighbors yourself. What else do we need to know?
But you also just said that we're in a you described the fact that we're in a battlefield.
Yeah.
And the first casualty of war is always the truth.
Exactly. And
that's really what we're discussing here, is how do we repair that damage? How do we get some truth and interject that into this dialogue about the extraterrestrial presence, good mm-hmm. and bad, good and bad?
Yeah.
So like I said, the first thing I think we need to do is change the model. I think anybody who's out there making wild claims should be dismissed and ignored and shunned, actually ridiculed, because they need to go. They're not serving anybody really with this stuff. It's mm-hmm. it's only further confusing the issue and clouding people's minds. So I don't really want to point fingers, but you know, you'd already mentioned MUFON. Mm-hmm. They have not contributed at all to this, as far in my opinion. Like you were saying, they actually have blocked mm-hmm. certain people like yourself from getting their information out. I noticed that their director just resigned recently. I'm not sure why, and I don't even care, because it's absolutely a waste of time. MUFON has been a waste of time. They put a picture of a pigeon flying over a statue in Washington, D.C. and called it a UFO. Mm-hmm. I mean, for Christ's sake, if you can't even identify a pigeon in a photograph, you really have no business claiming that you're investigating anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I know it's just basically a bulletin board, but I wrote to them and I said, you know, why do you have that up there? They don't respond. They don't care. I mean, it makes me very curious. The other thing I really don't get is the fact that if you are having a UFO encounter and you feel threatened by it or you think it's a concern of any kind, there's no one you can call except for Peter Davenport living in a silo, you know. Look, that doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah.
We have laws about these things, mm-hmm. Especially in Washington, D.C., and you cannot call any law enforcement agency or any branch of the military. They will refer you to Peter Davenport.
Yeah.
And what does he do with the information? He actually does censor some of that information, by the way, or he'll make these weird comments like, mm-hmm. you know, hoax, question mark,
yeah.
You know, whatever. And recently he published a photograph he says is the most incredible picture of a UFO.
Okay.
And it was taken from an aircraft. I think it was a Coast Guard aircraft. Anyway, it looks like a piece of debris either outside the craft or maybe on the window because it's out of focus. Everything else in the picture is in focus. This thing is out of focus. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like a craft. It just looks like a, you know, anything but alien. Okay.
Yeah.
And he's saying this is legitimate. And who is he to make these kind of decisions? And why do we have to read about this? Mm-hmm. Everybody's anonymous. He posts everything anonymously. It's not contributing. It hasn't.
Well, he is the NSA. I don't know if you realize that. He was a Russian translator for NSA. And we've had our run-ins with him because we had, you know, 20 people in the field with mm-hmm. major activity here calling him on the phone and people of a very high degree, you might say, in the professional fields, calling him and talking to him, and he totally belittled him, said, tell me when the little green men come out. And they actually moved. I don't know if you heard about the elk abduction that happened up here, but there was 14 tree planters, all out tree planting, and this UFO came in and snagged an elk and was pulling it up into the craft, and it had to turn around and go back the other way because it didn't have it in all the way. With 14 tree planters, and it was right on the side of Mount Adams, and I knew the people involved and talked to them,
yeah.
And you could tell they were shooken up by it. I mean, they were like, "Holy crap!" You know, you could just see it. It totally rearranged their whole thought process. But anyway, he moved it over to Mount Rainier, and said that, and he's always said there's no activity here whatsoever. Mm-hmm. On the ranch, and we have probably 30 emails that people have sent to us after they talked to him about their sightings of ships in the area. So I just kept saving them, and I watched him come unglued two or three times when I went into Seattle to show the evidence of up here. He just flipped out. So obviously he shouldn't be the objective party, you know, running that.
No.
That recording center.
No. And why is that? I agree with what you're saying. He basically tried to do the same thing to my journalism partner in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Regarding his photographs. You know, Mr. Davenport, I think, is really has poor eyesight to begin with, but he also has no understanding of photography. That's pretty obvious from the emails that I've mm-hmm. seen. But, you know, in the bigger picture, why does he act as the clearinghouse for this information, and yet our government acts like they cannot? What if they take the here's why I think it is. If they were to take the call, sort of like when a police gets a call, they're supposed to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were to respond, people would say, okay, and what happened? Well, they don't want to answer that. They don't want to admit that they've been trying to intercept these things or have successfully shot them down or mm-hmm. back engineered. Obviously, that I understand that. I understand mm-hmm. that. This goes back to what my spook friend told me, that, you know, there's certain things the public just can't handle.
Yeah.
Well, yes and no. I think in the bigger scheme of things, that the people that run this world really do not want it to come to a grinding halt for – you know, various reasons, and it really would, even if the benevolence were to land, peacefully, it would upset everything. Mm-hmm. It really would upset everything. And
It's mainly, you know, we all know the corporations run the planet, basically. And,
yeah.
And you know, you've got the war industry, the oil industry, and the pharmaceutical industry, the big three. Mm-hmm. If an advanced race landed here, and obviously they have fuel-less energy technology, you know, or they wouldn't be able to get here, they probably jump dimensions. Who knows what their technology can do?
Right.
Most likely they have incredible healing technologies that's probably just energetic and you wouldn't be on a subscription for the rest of your life. So that would be a definite threat to the oil and the pharmaceutical industry. And they probably would be so technologically advanced, there's not a damn thing we could do about it. So mm-hmm. war would be, if they said no more war, the war industry would be out of business.
Right.
So they're a threat, a three-way threat to big corporations. And that's what people really need to look at.
Sure, but they could at least initiate, in my opinion, the good guys could initiate some sort of gradual educational process mm-hmm. where they are allowed themselves and a representative to be interviewed in a way that we can verify that this really happened, mm-hmm. Create a safe house or whatever, give the interview, give a series of interviews with questions that can be, tested. Just like mm-hmm. a court of law, you know, we go out, we validate it, or they're invalidated. Hmm. And if they're validated, then we've got something to work with. In the meantime, yeah. like I said, this is a lot of what we're talking about. We're not getting any traction on this issue, honestly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's the problem.
Well, I'm trying to look at solutions here at the whole sure. thing. And I agree with you, but I was thinking, okay, on the other side, on the dark side, let's say they created mm-hmm. a safe house, and supposedly some of this is happening in Peru and where leaders are actually interacting with them. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
But let's say they do create this safe house, they do the interview, you blast it out all over YouTube.
Yeah.
And then they say, okay, we left this and this and this to be analyzed by your scientists. That has two major problems there. What scientist is going to put his butt on the line to validate that that's off-world technology that can't be bought off or incarcerated or told his family's going to disappear, you know, whatever. And then the other part is that whoever has that evidence, their life's in danger. I mean, you'd have to shotgun it out like a whole bunch of samples or something.
It could happen simultaneously, at least three different locations in a way mm-hmm. that, you know, because I know they're telepathic. They could easily orchestrate this if they really wanted to. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're waiting for a time that is unforeseen. You know, yeah. I did in my resignation statement, I did say that we will probably come to a point in the future, don't know when all of this is irrelevant because everybody will simply accept the fact that extraterrestrials do exist, mm-hmm. good, bad, ugly. Yeah. And you know, it's probably another reason why I felt like it's time for me to quit because a lot of this stuff is beyond my reach. I mean, I just don't... I only have so much that I can possibly affect yeah. in my own my personal, you know, ability is limited, and that's probably a good thing, you know, because on a mm-hmm. bad day I would probably do a lot of damage, you know, if I was given uh-huh. the opportunity, because I am human,
yeah,
you know, and I make mistakes, and I don't know how many of your listeners know Alex Collier, but that the aid to Alex Collier was a really painful lesson for me to learn. I've tried to be friends with him since 1986 and it just didn't work because he's incapable of being honest. And, you know, unfortunately he conned me into believing that he wasn't capable of getting a job because he went out and lectured about aliens. Mm-hmm. And that is simply not the case. He cannot get a good job is because he has a criminal record. And, you know, for people who are hearing this for the first time, I'm sorry if you find this difficult to believe or accept, but, you know, I have struggled with this and, you know, I simply can no longer. That's one of the reasons I took it all down. Mm-hmm. Even the interviews, man, I was getting a tremendous amount of traffic. People wanting to, fans of his wanting to, hear what he had to say. Because it was all based on a lie, and I mean, I know that for a fact, his name's not Alex Collier. He may have changed it, but he only did that after he got released from prison. And that's when he also started lecturing, which was a complete shock to me because, like I said, I'd known him since 1986. He never mentioned once to me that he'd had contact with anybody from off world. Mm-hmm. And so when he suddenly came forward with this new name and all this weird stuff he was talking about, I was like, oh man, he's really lost it. I mean, I don't know what they did to him in prison, but man, that's it was, I never believed it from day one. But, as a friend, when he contacted me recently and he was, basically playing up my sympathy about how he can't get a job and all these hardships. So I did try and help him out. And, the campaign was actually quite successful. There's a lot of people out there who are fans of his. I mean, really devoted. They want him to be president of the world and, come stay at his house. And sure, I'll send you hundreds of dollars and all this stuff. And, If I'd known everything I know now, I never would have done this. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only reason I'm mentioning it. I just want people to know my intentions were good, but I believe there's an old saying that the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I didn't have enough information, and I was suckered. I was suckered in, and there was a lot of people that donated money, and it's.
Yeah, I was one sad. Of those.
Well, so was I though, James.
Yeah. I don't feel bad about it though. Right. To me, anybody, I don't care who they are, if they're downtrodden, they need some help, I don't mind helping them out as long as they're going forward.
Well, I didn't see any evidence of that, James. Yeah. That's the problem. That was what ultimately made me question, well, that and the fact that he'd sent me his resume, because I'd asked him, let me see what you're sending out there. And I looked at it and I did a little research and I said, hey, wait a minute, I've got issues with this, that, and the other thing. And he basically lied to me about all of them, including the fact that he was using an Irish accent when he first changed his name. I'm like, what are you doing, You don't have an Irish accent. Oh, he says that was it came off funny on the recording. I said everybody else's voice was perfectly fine. You're the one using an Irish accent. And of course, later I found other people were complaining about the same thing. So look, this isn't all about him, but like I said, I appreciate what everybody did for him, but he created that situation for himself. He's not a victim. He did that to himself. Okay, and and then to lie about the fact that you created this mess for yourself in order to get sympathy, that's really unacceptable.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I have a hard time with that too, when somebody, plays upon your own compassion or empathetic abilities and you're trying to help somebody, but when they totally lie to you. I mean, I've had that happen here, all of us have, at the ranch where I've taken people in that, and really some well-known people, I've taken them in because they told me their whole sob story and told me this and this, and then I find out that their whole story was incorrect, and there's a reason why they're being, jailed or hassled or whatever, and it wasn't the reason that they told me, and over and over again, and so I learned some real hard lessons in there that not to get suckered into the poor me stories, and to look a little deeper, but it's human nature. You want to believe people. You want to help people, and if you're a good soul, that's just what you do. But
going forward, James, I'm not going to just take anybody's word for it, especially if they have a hard luck story.
Even
if they're a friend, even if they've been friends with me for 20 years or my entire life, if somebody comes up to me and says, I'm suffering and stuff, then let's talk about it. How did you get there? Where are you going to go? If we do something about it, what do you want to do about it? How are you going to fix the problem? I'm not just going to go, here's some money. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not going to give them room and board for free or whatever. I can't. I've been lied to on multiple occasions. And, it's just, again, this is why that was another contributing factor personally, why I decided to retire, because, I just get tired of the lies, and nobody seems to have any real concrete evidence that we could say, hold up to the world and say, hey, you know, this is a fact.
Mm-hmm. It just seems the whole earth is that way right now. I hate to say it, but
no, it's true.
But it's not just this community. It's, you have to ask yourself, where did the integrity go? Where did the honesty go? You know, if you made a mistake, then own it and learn from it. Go forward, you know, admit
right.
it.
Right.
And, to continue on these paths of deception and, you know, using your, I would say a lot of times victims use their role to extort money and support, you know, emotional support and whatever out of others. And maybe it's time that they step up to the plate and say, I created this, you know, this whole thing, get their power back and learn how to avoid those situations.
Yeah. Well, some people say, and I tend to believe that this year would be a time of revelation,
mm-hmm.
an apocalypse, as it were.
Yeah.
That where everything is going to be out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in my opinion, that's a very good thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't see how being deceptive is helping anybody.
No.
You know, I really believe we have a much greater potential than we understand or been able to understand mm-hmm. because of all the manipulation that's going on. And, you know, so I'm very optimistic, actually. I know a lot of people have written to me and said, you know, oh, don't give up and, you know, God bless you and thanks for everything you've done. But, you know, just for anybody that's listening, I'm doing fine. My life is good and I'm not giving up on humanity. I'm just making a course correction. I'm taking out some trash and I'm putting my foot down. You know, I'm simply not going to put up with this nonsense anymore. If you have evidence or if you want to, you know, if you really want to have some critical thinking, then I'm all for it. You know, I'm all for that. But as far as the other dog and pony show, I'm not doing it anymore. And, you know, I wouldn't say that I wasted my time. I really don't think I did. But I do know this. I would have quit years ago if I hadn't got involved in fact, I was already semi-retired anyways when I got those pictures from Daryl Sims of the UFOs landing on the Capitol. I thought, whoa, slow down here.
Yeah.
I should have, wait a minute, if this really happened, I would have heard about this before now. I mean, it's almost 3 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So my immediate reaction was, this has got to be fake.
Yeah.
But because there was contact information there, I thought, well, I'll just talk to this guy. I mean, mm-hmm. this guy must be really nuts if he's out there trying to make this work. But the more I talked to him, the more I realized he was telling the truth and that was actually an event that has been largely ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And I question the intent behind why any extraterrestrial group would swarm the Capitol like that again and, you know, allow themselves to be photographed again.
Mm-hmm.
This time, fortunately, the photographs were not confiscated like they were in the 50s.
Yeah.
So in some regards, disclosure has gone forward as far as Washington, D.C., where we have made some impact there. But the reaction to it, by and large, by the media, by the government, and by the UFO community, is utter crap.
Yeah.
You know, they don't respect the fact that this is a reality that needs mm-hmm. to be addressed. And, you know, I think 6 years is enough for me to, you know, and who knows, maybe 4 years from now or 2 years or 2 months from now, things will shift and people are like, oh, mm-hmm. yeah, UFOs, they've been going to D.C. since 1850. And it'll just be like, no big deal. Like, what's, you know, what's for dinner now? It's like, or
I think that is eventually what's going to happen. I know with here is that I just open the ranch to anybody that wants to bring their own cameras, do their own investigation, get their own footage.
Yeah.
Come and see for yourself. I'm open to any other explanation you have for this. And I've told, but you know what's funny? The vast majority of the people that are at the head of the UFO community never came.
No, because most of them are just full of it and they know it. They mm-hmm. know it, you know, like Bill Burns, he's another guy, you know, you would, I've tried to negotiate with him, but it's a lost cause. Mm-hmm. Not that he really matters, but you know, the main reason I was in having a dialogue with him is because of that stupid show he was doing, UFO Hunters.
Yeah.
I said, well, why don't you guys hunt UFOs in Washington, D.C.? We got the pictures. Well, I want to publish them. Okay, fine. You're not getting them for free, Bill. Yeah. And they're not mine to begin with. But, you know, unless you find somebody else that's willing to give you some for free, you're out of luck. Mm-hmm. You know,
or go get your own pictures.
Yeah, go right. You know? Go down there and get your own pictures. Exactly. You know, and you know, anyway, look, it's.
I've given all mine out for free, basically.
Well, that's great.
I've never been paid for some footage, and I think that's why we've been so successful at getting out all this information. But at the same time, it definitely doesn't help your pocketbook.
No, UFO Magazine is a commercial venture, and he wanted to publish it in his magazine. And I said, you know, talk to my partner. You're going to have to offer him some money because he's a professional photographer. Nobody else has these pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, you know, I've had a limited run on where I've published them, you should grab it. And I said, but you know, really, I want you to put it on television. I want you to pitch this to your producers because I think it needs to be on television. It's certainly authentic. It has a historic context. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, am I missing something here? I mean, this would actually, you know, it would maybe that's the problem. Maybe they know.
You sound just like me. I always go, what am I missing here? What's wrong with this picture? This is so obvious. But
yeah, well, you know what? I've been saying though for some time, I'll be glad the day when I can just retire. Yeah. But I was hoping that it would come after they, you know, the so-called disclosure event or events occurred, and I could just say, okay, well, I helped contribute to making that happen or preparing people for that event. But it hasn't happened, and like I said, I'm growing pretty weary of battling these idiots. You know, because it like I said, I'm not in control of these guys, and I don't want to be. But you know, I think it's important for us to at least discuss it. I know this sounds like a bitch fest to some people, this isn't just a pity party, folks. I'm saying this for a reason because having worked in this field for 20 years, and really worked hard to try and make a difference, you know, myself, James, other people that I know, we've all encountered the same thing, the same roadblocks, the same stupidity and all the egos and the backfighting and all this nonsense. It has to change. It really has to change in order for us to move forward. And it's going to take a lot of effort from a lot of people to make this happen. Really.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I always ask them, I said, why would any advanced being want to have anything to do with this mess that they've created? I mean, where's the place where they can go that's going to greet them with love and compassion and understanding and be able to understand the wisdom that they have to share? What purposeful good is it for them to come and contact this group?
Well, especially if we started either worship, some people would worship them. Mm-hmm. Some people would want to kill them.
Yeah.
Some people would want to create like a corporate entity around them.
Exactly.
You know, the networks would all want to make $1 billion off of it. And it's just, yes, there's too many agendas. There's too just, oh gosh. I know it sounds really negative what I'm talking about here, but you know, I think I'm seeing this more clearly than I ever have. I'm just being realistic about the way things are here, and so the benevolents don't want to come down here and babysit us, and they know it would upset the apple cart. The bad guys obviously wouldn't just let it happen. They wouldn't just go, sure, come on, because you know, we're tired of dominating this world and stealing all the resources and, you know, messing around with these infantile humans here. Come on down, you know, take over. No, I think that the good guys would never do that. They really don't want that. But like I said, at the same time, though, there is more I feel that they can do. Perhaps they're waiting for a particular opportune time, and I can't see it, or it hasn't happened yet. But the potential is there. And I'm just sort of laying it out there because, like I say, the status quo sucks. I mean, there's no other way to say it. You know, and I'm just, you know.
Well, I mean, we're looking for a solution, and we're looking for a way to heal this situation. We have to identify what's going on in order to bring out a healing. I mean, you can't say there is no wound and ignore it, you know, and then let it take over the whole body and go green, you know.
That's what I've always said about Washington, D.C. You can't solve a problem unless you know you have one.
Yeah.
And in some regards, we're still deep in denial, especially the UFO community. Because most people, it's just a curiosity. I think my understanding is that they treat it like it's just entertainment, and that's fine. But the people that take it seriously, they're making money off of these bogus claims, and that's got to stop. It really does have to stop, you know. And we all have responsibility in that. Don't put these people on your shows. Don't put them in your magazine. Don't pander to them. They're pandering to us, but don't support them in any way. They need to be ignored. They need to be shunned and ridiculed and exposed. I think that's where people can get involved in calling these people on the carpet and saying, you're full of it. And you have no business trying to mislead us. You know, just knock it off. We've had enough of that. And there's just no more time. There's no more room, I don't think, on this world for any more lies and deception.
Yeah, I agree. You know, on a positive note, what I feel, not that this isn't positive because we are looking for solutions, but I kind of agree with you that this is the, you know, the apocalypse, the age of revelation where everything is just going to come up. I think there's a force behind that.
Right.
Whatever you want to call it. You know, everybody has a name for it, but let's just call it a higher consciousness and energy or an evolutionary process that's going on where we are. And seeing all this surfacing is part of the healing process. And I think it really does. People like us are necessary to help people to see through the nonsense and not get swept up in this big, you know, wave of BS that we can call it.
Yeah.
And just to be a light. I get emails all the time. They go, thank you for shedding some light on this. And I always tell people, I go, some of these messengers are so disempowering,
right?
And they're leading you to believe that somebody's going to do everything for you. It just doesn't work that way.
No, that's a violation of free will.
Yeah, and I said, all you got to do is look at the messages and say, okay, are you part of the solution, or do you think the solution is going to come and be done for you? What, you know, which way are you going to go? There are solutions out there and people working towards those solutions, but you know, we've all got to unite and come together and work together to solve these problems and you know, end the petty bickering and the competition and all the other nonsense and lay the stuff out on the table. If it has merit and if there's proof behind it and if it's repeatable, then we have to accept that, you know, that this is what's going down.
Right. The pioneers of a new paradigm. Mm-hmm. I think that's really who we're talking to. I believe that's who you and I are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would encourage anybody to, even though it might be slightly uncomfortable, just, you know, choose a side. I'm sorry to say, you know, everything is, like I said, it's so polarized, but if you make that choice, then a lot of other things will follow from it. Mm-hmm. And as I say, you know, I was shocked when the response that I got from around the world from people. I really didn't know who's been following my work. Or more importantly, I didn't know that I was so well respected by people, because I'm just another person. I live a normal life.
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, I've got a wife and a kid and a dog, and you know, I do barbecue and fishing and whatever. I mean, I consider myself extremely normal. Mm-hmm. But I study something that's really abnormal or extraordinary. Mm-hmm. But like I said, my threshold, my tolerance level for the lies and stuff, it just snapped. Because of these events, and it all happened this year, and I know we're only in February, but it does seem like indicative of what we were saying before, that this is the year of revelation. Mm-hmm. And part of that is sort of a personal awakening and simply a decision not to tolerate things that are untrue any longer.
Yeah, so. I agree 100%. I really do think that that, I mean, that's the only thing that keeps me knowing is that I do feel there's an unstoppable force that's coming in, and that we're going to have to get with the program and go with the flow and get straight with ourselves and others if we're going to be here, and just stop all this warring and petty bickering and destruction of each other and the planet, and if we're going to continue to evolve on this planet.
Right.
You know, we're coming up to the end of the hour, unfortunately. I don't know if you want to give your website out or not.
Yeah,
being that you're retired. But
now, a lot of people have been going there, and I still have the blog and the books and the radio show. I'll be doing another one this week about a new scientific model that I help pioneer. You know, it's cool. Yeah, unicusmagazine.com. I think I'm going to keep that open, but it's evolving just like I am. It's just an extension of me. Uh-huh. And, you know, some of the influences, both earthly and unearthly, that I've encountered in this world or lifetime. So anyway, I'm always open to hearing from people too. Even if you want to be critical, it's fine. You know, if you need to try and take me on, I say good luck. Because I'm not a newbie to this. I'm 52 years old, but this isn't my first time, you know, around the mulberry bush. I've been around. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I'm the same. I don't even tell people how old I am. I've been around for quite a while, I've been doing it for at least 25, almost 30 years, mm-hmm. but 25 years intensely, you know, into this field.
Yeah.
And I, like you, I think we've seen it all, and just going, you know, maybe part of me goes, I don't think this is fixable. I think it needs a divine force, something bigger, a big influx of energy to come in and just shove all this right up to the surface. And I think that's what's going on.
Yeah, cosmic anima.
Yeah, yeah,
I could see that coming too. But you know, so but I sincerely believe it's important we have this kind of dialogue, because it's vicariously there are people that are listening and learning and preparing themselves and mm-hmm. possibly others. You know, because we're all connected. You never know; it's a ripple effect. You know, that morphogenic field, the mm-hmm. alleged hundreds monkey theory. Information does flow. And in fact, it's flowing faster now. That was the other thing that shocked me, how quickly people from like Australia and South America were writing to me like the next day saying, hey, why are you retiring? You know, I was like, wow, that got out there quick. So, we really are a global community. And the sooner we all start uniting around a common effort, the quicker we're going to see some sort of evolutionary progress.
Yeah, I agree. I do believe that there, you know, when I, same thing, I wrote my letter of resignation, and I was just overwhelmed with emails and people saying, you know, that's why I left. That's why I don't go to the events anymore.
Right.
There is a lot of people out there that are just done with the nonsense, and they want to hear, you know, some truth and some very balanced, verifiable information. They're tired of the whole enchilada. But, you know, we could go along for another 2 hours on this one, but I know you've got things to do.
Okay, James. Thank you so much for having me back. You know what? It sounds like we need to, there's a new movement that will start. Like I said, the New Paradigm mm-hmm. Project. That's something I interviewed those guys, New Paradigm Project. But I think, you know, whatever we want to call it, it's going to be better.
Yeah.
It'll be better than what we've had before, okay? Whatever we create together, mm-hmm. it's going to be better.
Well, we'll stay in touch on that, because
that
is a good idea. And I think if we do get a good balanced group of people, which I have quite a few on my end, maybe we can go forward with this and do something on a whole different level.
Sounds good, James. Thank you.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks. It's the end of the hour. Have a great day. And, you know, let's all drop down into the heart and just find our integrity, our honesty, and start loving each other and search for truth. You know, stop giving your power away to all these other crazy events that are unfolding. Anyway, have a great day. Greetings, this is James Gillen, and I'm your host. We've got another great show. We've got Kristen Ann on the show, and she's written the book Exploring Sacred Space, A Vast Quest. And Kristen has spent a lifetime studying spirituality and metaphysics. Her life has been one of unusual experiences, encounters, and constant coincidences that have added to her studies, deepening her understanding of life at its core levels. She had a near-death experience as a child, which instilled the sense of knowing that there are many more levels of existence than the physical one we see. And she's the author again of the book Exploring Sacred Space. So anyway, without any further ado, I want to bring Kristen on the show. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm right here.
Oh, thanks for coming on the show.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, I was going through your book, and you know, it's quite amazing compilation of contacts and connections and stories of other contactees and channels, and I mean, it goes on and on and on. And I'm really familiar with a lot of these different beats. But I'm really curious, how did you get started in this?
Well, you know, it may sound funny when I try to explain how I got started in all of this, but my life from the very beginning was different. I do remember when I was born, being taken home from the hospital at birth and thinking that I was an adult. I mean, it's really bizarre and it sounds bizarre, but I still remember that day being taken home. And the weird thing was I could understand everything everyone was saying, and I still remember some of those conversations. And it was the shock of my, like, 36-hour-old life or something, 48-hour life, when I found out that my big sister was a baby. And I was, someone said, well, put her in with her sister for a while, and they brought me in the other room and laid me down in a crib next to a baby in a playpen. So I think that's why that day is instilled in me so much. But so my life was always sort of a little different, I guess, than other people. Of course, you don't know that when you're growing up. It's just that I was always sure that there was more to life and always very inquisitive. And then at age 9, I had the near-death experience, and I started my own little metaphysical library from then, back in the 60s. And, you know, it was hard to find books back then, but you could find Edgar Cayce, Ruth Montgomery, and Jean Dixon, things like that.
Yeah, it seems that, I'm just curious, I'm sure you had had your invisible friends and were having, like, multidimensional conversations all the time. And I'm just curious, too, I had a similar experience where I would hear people say one thing, I would feel what they were feeling, and then know what they were thinking at the same time. And none of it was congruent. It was kind of like I would look at people in confusion. And sometimes I'd get really confused about it. And the only thing that saved me was realizing is that what I was experiencing was confusion, you know, in the other person, basically.
Yeah. I had similar experiences to that. In fact, I insisted that I didn't want to go to church anymore when I was in high school, to my parents' horror, because, you know, I just couldn't stand all the two-faced, you know, people would leave, and inside when they were there, they were really super critical of everyone, including the, you know, the priest and blah, blah, blah. So similar.
Things. Human nature. Yeah, it's pretty, I have a friend, he always goes, silly humans, you know, but, you know, I wasn't thinking about it. I mean, it sounds condescending, but I don't really want it to sound that way. It is funny though, when you think about it, if a person did come in to this planet that was totally telepathic and that had the ability to sense and feel and get all that input at the same time, I think most of humanity would drive them nuts.
Right. Yeah. And of course, when you're not that I was totally telepathic when I was younger, but, you know, a child doesn't know that everyone else doesn't know the same things.
Yeah, the you know, going through, it's amazing. I was looking through your book and a lot of the different things you cover. I mean, it goes back into the Hathors. I was actually corrected by an Egyptian once, and he said the real true name is Hathors, but I don't know. You know, maybe that was his reality, but
yeah, that's how they pronounce it.
Yeah. But anyway, I think this is really interesting. They have the Egyptian, one of the Egyptian gods, Ptah, in here. And, you know, he's a god with gray skin and a bodysuit. You know, it's kind of interesting, the photographs you have in here. And I know Ptah is one of the beings, supposedly, that Billy Meyer was in contact with as well.
Oh, interesting. Right. What's fascinating about Ptah is he was the only god, in quotes, Egyptian god, who wore a one-piece white bodysuit. Mm-hmm. And his skin was gray or blue. Mm-hmm. And he also had a little pack on his back that was often connected in pictures by a tube to his mouth.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe it's some kind of filter or something of that nature. Right. You know, unfortunately, I've come to understand basically that I think Billy borrowed that name, you know, for his program. But just because of some of our interactions with them, that they came out with some serious errors, I guess, in some of his things that he said were going to happen, or even, you know, talks. So we have a little bit of history there. I mean, I guess Ptah came out and said there was no UFO activity here whatsoever on the mountain, you know, on Mount Adams. But the problem is there's a 200-year history of written, documented, you know, UFO activity here with, you know, the Yakima Nation. Kenneth Arnold actually coined the word flying saucers when he lost them on the western slopes of Mount Adams. And Dr. J. Allen Hynek did studies here. I mean, fire tower operators, rangers, police, tribal police, all of these people have been coming forward about the ongoing activity here. And then he changed the story later to say that they were military, and it's been going on for hundreds of years. But, you know, so that was, we have a little problem with his version of Ptah, but we don't have a problem with Ptah itself. I just think he borrowed that name to keep his story going.
Right.
You know, which is interesting. But
interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Never knew quite what to think of Billy Meyer's story.
Well, I know whatever might have been true there was just pretty much, you know, taken into the trash by Michael Horn, unfortunately, because he attacks every other contactee and says that he's the one and only, you know, he's the only, what do you call it? He's the only true prophet of God on the planet, and he's the only contactee, and that's the story that they're promoting and standing by. But I know
who was that?
What's that?
Who was that you're talking about?
Billy Meyer.
And who was the other person?
Well, Michael Horn is the franchise owner for America of the Billy Meyer story. But, you know, to me, I know you've been doing a lot of research, and I have too, and there's been a lot of prophets on this planet and still are. And there's a lot of contacts going on and have been for quite some time. So both of those claims, you know, can be dismissed right away. You know, that's in my book anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my mental notebook. But anyway, I was looking at things. I'm very. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the Hathors and maybe what you know about them, or if you've had any experiences with them.
Well, you know, one fascinating thing you'll see in my book, and I'm trying to find what page. I found something. We went to the workers' village, and they led us into an ancient Coptic temple. Or no, it wasn't Coptic, but it was an ancient temple behind the workers' village that was locked behind iron gates. They led us in. We went back to a room in the far left back, and it was you could tell it was a very special, sacred room. Mm-hmm. And on the left wall were all the Egyptian gods, the Syrian gods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my professor, my clairvoyant professor from the Waldorf Rudolf Steiner Institute in Detroit in the mid-70s, our classes there were just so fascinating because we learned everything from its true depth. of reality, and mm-hmm. they were just fascinating. He explained to us that the Syrian gods, though they're spelled, though it's been translated from Egyptian with the figure, with the character, the letter Y, S-Y-R-I-A-N, so people have misconstrued it to think that they were somehow connected with Syria. That is totally wrong. Mm-hmm. I spell it S-I-R-I-A-N. Mm-hmm. And my professor explained that those gods were from Sirius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that totally validates our experiences here, because we've had a lot of connections with these feline beings. And, you know, some beautiful feline beings and some fifth, sixth, and seventh dimensional beings. And they state their origin is from... they're Syrian. They're from Sirius. And at the same time, you look at the Egyptian statues and the reliefs, and they have these felines that are bipedal, they're humanoid, standing right next to the pharaohs and, you know, all these other beings there.
Right. Yeah. It's so fascinating. I mean, they explained it and depicted these things in the only ways that they knew how. On page 51 of my book, in that temple, on the opposite wall of those Syrian gods, and I always felt like the red orbs on top of their heads was a depiction of the sacred craft that they had come in, mm-hmm. the spacecraft, because the one I had seen in New Mexico was glowing red.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, on the opposite wall is, and if you look at it on the website, you can see it in color, is this image of what John Anthony West told me is called the mysterious boat of Sokar. Uh-huh. No one else in my group saw and realized what it was. I realized right away that it's a depiction of a UFO.
Oh,
it,
yeah.
A canoe, which is their way of showing that it was a vehicle. Mm-hmm. Only it is the only canoe, the boat of Sokar is the only canoe with a curve, with an exaggerated curve. It has a dome above it, and above the dome is the red ball that is mm-hmm. above all the Syrian gods. And there are, it has tripod legs and is on a platform. And there are little green birds on the front end of the, and a winged-like flap hanging from the front end, which all indicate to me that it was a vehicle that went through the air. Mm-hmm. Plus, the paddles are resting in the paddle rests on the other end, which is another clue to me that it did not take the paddles to move.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, definitely this does not look very seaworthy when you look at this picture.
No, and but, no one else has seen that, not even the group that I went with. I went with Greg Braden.
Mm-hmm.
No one, not even the archaeologists, have recognized what it is.
Well, even a lot of the stupas, you know, if you go over to, you know, a lot of the, in the Hindu faith, the stupas look just like, same thing, they look like UFOs.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
You know, so you go, well, what's, you know, and then they talk about the vimanas, you know, the flying ships, and then they go on an in-depth description of the vimanas and saying that there were, some vimanas were metallic and physical, some were pure energy, some were light ships, and some were just like Merkaba vehicles or pure consciousness. So it they go in depth as to different types of ships, you know, or whatever you want to call them, light ships or spaceships or even the physical UFOs that they had recorded in early history.
Right. It's such an interesting thing. If we were to be able to know the true meaning and to see the spacecraft, they are interdimensional. Some appear very physical, some can be very physical, mm-hmm. and some can be more, you know, vehicles of light. So
yeah, you know, there's another question I have for you too. Now, for some of the Christian listeners, and I know we have some, that for some reason they depict everything with horns as demonic or the devil.
Right.
And it's really, that's just a program that's been created over time. I mean, there's old reliefs that have Moses with horns. You know, there's frescoes with Moses with horns. And in the ancient times, the horns represented a really high degree of spirituality or an attainment of spiritual power, you might say. And whenever I see, you know, the pictures of the Hathors or whoever, you know, with the ball of light over their head and the horns, they're always mistaken for demonic or being, you know, part of the devil or something.
Well, okay, this is the story behind that, James. It was explained to me when I was there in Egypt that the Hathors had very unusual ears. They had ears that the Egyptians and the Asians equated with cow's ears.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, in my intuitive sort of mind, I could see that when they started coming, this was when bulls and cows became sacred throughout uh-huh. India and Nepal,
yeah.
and that whole area in Egypt. Uh-huh. And they depicted the Hathors with bull's ears,
mm-hmm.
bull's horns, because she was so equated somehow with the cows. They were considered sacred
mm-hmm.
because of Hathor. And the Hathor race's ears that looked so much like cow's ears, they were very, very sensitive ears, apparently. But that is all those horns meant, that they were somehow relating them with sacredness
mm-hmm.
and tying it all into cows. So she was often depicted with those bull horns on her head, which held the round red disc, which I feel was the vehicle that they had come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their ears are very, very, they look like they're very, very sensitive and have the ability to detect probably tones, even ELF tones, who knows, you know, they're pretty amazing. Now, I've always felt, and this is my intuition, is that they weren't really connected to the cows, but more connected to the felines.
Well, this was something interesting about Hathor, the goddess Hathor. She had an alter ego. She was also Hathor and also the goddess Sekhmet,
mm-hmm.
which was a feline god. So Hathor was the sort of musical, you know, god of beauty, and Sekhmet was the goddess, the warrior goddess.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of polar opposites, but the same being.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see how you would, you know, even if you were a loving, joyous being, you'd need a little warrior energy just to be on Earth. I mean, I don't know what the times were back then, but I'm sure there would come a time, you know, if you're in a primitive, barbaric society where you would have to have, you know, a little bit of warrior energy or an ability to defend yourself.
Right, right.
But, yeah, I found it interesting. Here we've had some experience. We had a monk here from Japan that took some amazing photographs of these feline beings, and I've been in contact with him for a long time, but he actually photographed them.
And, really? Were they etheric or were they physical beings?
They were the ones that he photographed were actually six-dimensional beings, but you can see them very clearly, and you can see the lines of energy cross, and all of a sudden they appear to him, and he took four photographs of these beings, and they're upright, and they look more like a panther, kind of, and they're...
How tall?
Kind of he said they're about 14 foot tall.
Oh my goodness.
12 to 14 foot tall, this group.
Can you find the pictures?
Oh, they're on our website, yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, if you go to isei.org, you can see the photographs. But this was an amazing man. This guy has been bilocating, doing all kinds of things. He comes here and teaches classes. But he has this ability to photograph beings when they appear. He got a beautiful picture of Kuan Yin as well, appearing to him, and a photograph of Mary. A beautiful photograph of Mary. And that's a long story, too. I don't want to go into that, but the story around that, how that all occurred, was quite interesting. But we're actually photographing a lot of different types of beings that have been showing up here, and it's been all benevolent. It's been very, very positive and benevolent, but we're also very well trained in healing and setting boundaries with beings that aren't benevolent,
Yeah, right. So
we've had a lot of training in that area.
Well, the main impetus of my book, Exploring Sacred Space, was to address and explain this point in time, because of all the different people that I have met and studied with and crossed paths with, one scenario is painted, and all the negative speculation out there about 2012 and what's going to come, it needs to be broken through and to share more of a reality of what really is coming and happening with that.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stories out there, everything from the whole Earth flipping over and continents breaking up and everybody pretty much dying or going underwater to nothing's going to happen.
Right. Well, my book starts out with my clairvoyant professor, mm-hmm. and he explained to us one day that Christ would be returning in your lifetime, and his ancient soul name is Maitreya. Mm-hmm. And then he explained that 42 other masters will be coming and all living among us incognito until the time comes when they decide to make an announcement. But he also did say that there was going to be something really remarkable. He said that we're living at a time of Noah. And I show in my book a graph of the Wheel of Ages. Mm-hmm. He explained that every 25,920 years, mm-hmm. a major catastrophe happens on Earth. At either end of that 26,000-year cycle, so 13,000 years apart. And what's fascinating is I have been an observer through life ever since then, and I've watched all these things unfold. And scientists have now stated that this same great cycle of the same duration is when a major alignment of planets happens. Uh-huh. And just like the Mayans, when their calendar ended, the scientists say that it is happening on December 21st, 2012.
And I think not just a planetary alignment, but a galactic plane. We're aligning with the core of our galaxy. And all of those things together, I know planets act as like capacitors or whatever. The energy jumps from one to the other to the other. And when they all line up like that, you can have some major events that follow that, from everything from just crazy storms to earthquakes and volcanic activity to, people just flipping out because of the energy moving in so fast.
Right. If you do a search, put in Google these four words, Michael Tsarion, T-S-A-R. Mm-hmm. I-O-N, photon belt, P-H-O-T-O-N, belt. He goes into this whole thing that I go into in my book from a scientific level, and he says we'll be going through the photon belt. Mm-hmm. Now, of all the things that my professor said, that the original remote viewers that I met have said, we are going to be passing. What's going to be happening is we're going to be passing into a different dimension, mm-hmm. a fifth dimension that American Indians call it.
Yeah.
And apparently this passing through the photon belt is going to trigger this on other levels. And yet it is nothing to be afraid about. And this is one thing that I wanted to especially stress with people. The one thing that he said was he gave us instructions on how to prepare. And it's all in the book. There's so much information in there that people really need at this time. But one of the things that he said was to stay inside and to be happy, to be with family and friends, and to sing a lot. He emphasized that. Sing, tell stories, but don't be freaked out because everything will be fine.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the Native Americans say. They say, go down in your kiva, you know, get your food and water together and go down your kiva. And I guess, I'm not sure how many days. I don't know if they have a day. Some people say 3 days. Some people have it longer, but they say...
Right. This is one thing that he did talk about, too, and there's more instructions in the book. He said that there will be 3 days of darkness while this happens, while this transition happens. And this is when you're to sort of seclude yourself inside and don't look out. And that sort of reminds me of, like, Lot's wife who looked and was disintegrated.
Yeah. I always have a feeling about Lot's wife. When you hear about a great mushroom cloud going up over the city, right. And they said looked back actually translated to went back, which is interesting. And, you know, maybe she went back and was just way too close to the city when that whatever went off, you know, that toasted everybody. But, you know, basically... That's the same message we've been getting, is that, you know, don't, it's time to really go within, you know, get very clear with yourself, focus on love and joy and bliss, create a fear-free environment, and just allow the shift to happen.
Right. Right.
You know, it's not like we can do anything about it,
right?
Other than flow with it.
And... I mean, this whole thing of what is happening now has gotten many other beings from other levels very interested and actually living on Earth among us. In 1977, I went out west to Alamogordo, New Mexico, and I knew nothing about that area when I went out there. But when I got into town, I intuitively could see that there had been a lot of UFO activity in this area. Mm-hmm. Well, back then, there was so much disinformation about it, and you were laughed at if you brought the subject up. So I brought up the subject very carefully with the people I was staying with. I asked them if they ever heard of UFOs coming down in the area. And I was delighted that they not only heard of it, but they knew of a man who had been contacted while he was stationed close by on the White Sands Missile Base. And that was Dan Fry. Mm-hmm. And you can find his site at danfry.com. You can find some pictures in my book, too. I ended up meeting, well, they brought out his books, and there was such a fascinating account. And I was delighted to find out that Dan lived at that time outside of Phoenix, because I was going on to Phoenix. So I got in town, dropped my bags, got on the phone to Dan, and explained that I had just stayed with his friends, read his books, and I'd love to meet him and discuss what his encounters were like in person. And he said, you know, times were so much simpler then and more trusting. He said, why, sure, why don't you come up for the weekend? So that was a Thursday. The next day, Friday, I was catching a bus to Tonopah, Arizona, where he was living. And there's a picture in the book. He was living in circular buildings with UFO-looking roofs. Mm-hmm. And he said that they were like that when he bought the property, but he thought that if any spacecraft wanted to land, they would be camouflaged that way. And anyway, I ended up spending several weekends with him while he would explain to me what it was like meeting an alien and all the things, the fascinating things that they had told him. Mm-hmm. First of all, they explained to him that there was something very, very big happening in our future. They convinced him that they were wanting to come to Earth as emissaries of good to help humanity. And they explained that it was necessary for what they needed to do for them to come and live on Earth as human beings. So for 4 years before they came down, they would have Dan get them books from the base library, books on anything and every subject. They wanted to know every aspect of life on Earth and all the different cultures and languages and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the most fascinating books to them was our Bible. And they explained to Dan that it is their ancestors who were often written in the Bible as angels. Uh-huh. They often played the part of angels helping humanity. And that wasn't so off track, because the Greek word angel literally means messenger or emissary of goodness, uh-huh. of God. So, you know, one of the most, well, there were several fascinating things that they said about that, about the Bible. They said that where it says in the Bible, two brothers will be sleeping together, one will be taken and one won't, refers to, in quote, end times, when the important thing is there will be a split, actually, in realities. There will be an Earth in this physical dimension where all the people whose energy is not elevated to the level necessary to make it to the new Earth, and I apologize that this sounds so science fiction, mm-hmm. but there will be, you know, the reality here, which will look devastated, and then most of us will be taken to a different reality, a different dimension of Earth, what is called in the Bible and by Eckhart Tolle, a new Earth. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they explain that when it says that in the Bible, that two brothers will be sleeping, one will be taken and one will not, it simply meant that if your energy isn't in the right place to make this transition, it doesn't matter how close you are, you won't. And the effort of all these, you know, interdimensional beings, extraterrestrials, the hierarchy, this past 100 years has been ushering in this whole New Age movement in order to raise people's awareness and energy so that as many people as possible will make this big transition.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting, when I was in the TIC, they call it the Teachings of the Inner Christ, and it was a blend of East and West. We had Babaji come in, and a woman was channeling him, a very clear channel, and he was talking about the Earth, there'd be a bifurcation process or whatever, where there would be a split, and there would be two Earths and two timelines, I guess. I don't know if he didn't say timelines. I mean, I'm trying to put this into my own physics basket.
That is what he meant. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's it. You know, the interesting thing, James, is all the governments of the world know that something big is coming, and they secretly have all built their underground cities to cover their own butts, you know. But they, you know, the result is going to be for them, when they do come up, they'll find a devastated planet and most people gone.
Well, I think about it, too, is that, let's say you all go underground. Like, who wants to be underground with a bunch of self-centered control freaks? You know, they're tyrants. I mean, that's when the energy, there's nowhere to hide. It's going to push all that forward, and they're just going to go crazy,
right?
You know, with all their shenanigans as they manifest, you know, as their consciousness manifests in their outer world. They really don't know how to cooperate or live in harmony with each other, the planet, or anything else. So I don't see how they could even function hardly on any level.
Right.
You know, when these new energies come in.
Right. Right. There is something very big going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it is going to involve going through a different dimension for most of us.
Recently I received some information from one of these feline beings from Sirius, and she did talk about that, and she did talk about a pole shift and some other things, but she said that we are moving in through the fourth and into the fifth dimension, and some people would stay in the fourth, some people, you know, would move on to the fifth depending on their consciousness and their energy. But yeah, she did. She talked a lot about the times we're going into, and that how important it is for us to release the past and heal, and focus on love and joy and bliss, and learn to live in harmony with each other and the planet, and stay in service mode. And so, the same information that you've written about in your book that you've gathered. I mean, some of this was how many years ago? 50, 60 years ago, they were saying these things.
Right.
They're still saying it today, the same information from different sources.
Yes, different sources, all saying the same thing, painting the same picture. Mm-hmm. And what impressed me most deeply were the clairvoyant people that I have met, because there's no speculation involved there. You get the clear picture of what is, mm-hmm. and what will be. And the most important thing is to realize that there is going to be a tremendous change, but do not let fear take hold of you, because everything is going to be all right.
Mm-hmm. That is the main thing, that fear is the thing that's going to hold you back. And I know you had your own near-death experience, and I've had mine a couple as well, and when you have those near-death experiences and you're in that plane of bliss or in those higher dimensions, death just loses its sting. And that's the biggest fear of all, is the fear of death. That's the big one that we all have to conquer, and there's a lot of other little ones surrounding that.
Right, right. The important thing with what's coming, and of course no one knows the date, but because of this major alignment, and the scientists have said there will be some effects on Earth, but no one knows, and they're not even going into what it may be. I'm thinking that it may well be December 21st. But the important thing is to not be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
To not be afraid, and to just stay inside. And you can find, specific instructions in the book.
I've always felt that we've gone through a lot of major shifts already, energy waves, whatever you want to call them, or liftings. And so, but this is the big finale, it's like, it's nothing to be feared. It's just going to be a lot stronger than the last ones that we went through. And basically, what I'm seeing now is I'm getting overloaded by emails with people saying everything is happening so fast. Everything is coming up for them to face. All of their fears are manifesting. They're just, calling me in just dire straits. And the only advice I can give them is to, release the past, let it go. Don't try to control this. Try to become the observer and just flow with it. I go, you cannot control this. You can't fix it. You can't control it. That you're just going to have to become an observer and watch it, observe it, and allow it to move wherever it needs to move.
Right, right. One thing that my professor did stress was that, besides not being afraid, he said that toward the end, before this was going to happen, this big thing, which he would never really go into detail about, but he said, time will be speeded up. And it says that in the Bible, too.
Mm-hmm.
He said that it is going to be necessary for the hierarchy to stream energy toward Earth just to keep it together so that we meet this point of destiny. So there is a lot of energy coming toward Earth now. And, things are speeded up. You can just see that in everyday life.
Mm-hmm. The time between the thought and the manifestation, or the action and the reaction, you might say, is getting shortened and shortened and shortened. So we are on a crash crash course of enlightenment, and I don't think it's optional if you want to make it to the fifth, you know, dimension, whatever you want to call it. It's really not optional. We need to go through it. But we could choose not to do anything at all, and then we'd probably be left on the old Earth to finish out our program and our learning experiences, whatever those may be.
Right. That will all depend on your level of energy, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that all these beings have been working so hard to produce all these movements and books in order to awaken as many people as they can so that the largest population will make this transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're working overtime.
Right.
And without any gratitude from us on the earth, yeah, or acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Which I think would really speed up the process if we did start acknowledging these off-worlders and these higher dimensional beings and masters and welcome them into our lives and ask them for help. With individually and collectively, you know, in the earth itself, if we would do more of that, more prayer work and more initiation work or intention work, that this would all go a lot smoother.
Right, right. You know, another intriguing thing, and if anybody wants to see the book and even see the list of chapters and hear, mm-hmm, interviews, you can go to exploringsacredspace.com.
Great.
But another intriguing thing that Dan Fry had told me was that way back in the 50s or in the 60s probably, the aliens had told him that there were thousands of them living on Earth, incognito, mm-hmm, human beings back then. And Dan looked at me and he said, by now, and this was when I saw him, it was from 77 to 79, he said, by now there are many, many thousands of them living among us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fascinating concept to think of.
Yeah, you wonder who is an alien and who... I mean, I think there's a lot of people that in their soul are more off-world than Earth, and they've incarnated, and they don't even know it yet. Some are being awakened to that fact, and a lot of them are still walking around asleep, you know, waiting to be activated.
Right. Well, the interesting thing is that all of them have been living among us, intermingling, having children, you know, uh-huh, intermingling all the DNA. And our DNA is partly off-world anyway.
Uh-huh.
But what I'm getting at is some people do have more DNA, ET DNA, than others, just because someone, their parents even, or, you know, someone in their heredity line may be from a different planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had experiences along that line. Pretty crazy, crazy stuff has happened in our history, family history. And in fact, my dad actually was raised in New Mexico. And we have a lot of family there, and they were involved in the Roswell thing as well. And, you know, I got firsthand stories about that from the people that were there. But, you know, that's a whole nother story. But the as far as coming into the future, you know, it seems that we all could play a very big role in how this future comes about.
Right. Right. You know, we don't have to be so passive. It's important, really, to be aware of what is going to be happening, mm-hmm, which is why I wrote the book. And, in fact, also I have the account of someone I met out there in New Mexico whose uncle was involved in Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real interesting story. But anyway, yes, I mean, things are definitely happening. There's a lot happening on Earth. There are many other beings living among us, and it's just things that we should be aware of.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I'm curious about what, did he go into depth about meeting with these, was it just one group that Dan met with, or was there several groups?
It was just one group.
Mm-hmm.
I also met some of the original remote viewers. And one in particular explained to me in a conversation that he had 28 degrees of top secret clearance above the president. Uh-huh. That there, you know, there are many things the presidents have no need to know and don't know.
Oh, yeah.
All of people of his, you know, degree of top secrecy know all about the aliens, have met them. He would have to walk through rooms filled with aliens. And he explained to me that there's at least 12 different races coming to Earth. Each of them look very different, though the ones that are appearing in public are made to look like humans.
Mm-hmm.
I did meet an alien friend of Dan Fry's, 1979. After teaching for a year in Colorado, I moved back down to Alamogordo and was surprised to find that Dan and Florence Fry had moved to Alamogordo since I had seen them last outside of Phoenix. And that summer, he was sponsoring a psychic surgeon to come to town. It's all explained in my book.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, to make the story short, I could see that this man, he walked with an incredibly smooth glide. He spoke with a very unusual lisp, and his forehead was very high. But he wore long sleeves and a crew neck and socks and shoes, even though the rest of us wore sandals. So all you could see really was his face and hands. But I could see that his etheric hands and forearms had been altered to look human. I could see that his real hands looked more like claws, and his facial features had also been altered to look human. And we had everyone else, this was 3 days of a healing session, 3 consecutive days. I signed up, even though it was expensive, because I intuitively knew that this guy was not from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was right. But anyway, everyone else was in and out in like 5 or 10 minutes, but he took me last because we would have the longest conversations. And you know, he spoke about your people and your president. And I regret that I don't remember all the details of what he said, but because everything else was overshadowed by what he said to me in the third session. He looked into my eyes very deeply, and he said, now remember, I was a young kid, essentially,
yeah,
in my early 20s. He said, "You know, don't you? You know that we are the last generation to fully grow on Earth as we know it." And, you know, I did know, intuitively I did know that there was going to be a major change. But, you know, as a kid, you don't want to hear this because you don't want to think of your friends and family and the Earth ending and all that. So it kind of freaked me out, but now I realize there's nothing to be freaked out about. We are all going to a different dimension.
Uh-huh. And you know, you need to really think about this. This little Earth suit we have right now is just one of many. And you know, some of those expressions have been on not just the Earth. I mean, they've been in other planes and dimensions and other planets and other civilizations. We just conveniently forgot, you know, when we went through the old minesweep or whatever before we came into here. But it's really important to realize that there really isn't an ending. Endings, there's always a sacred circle. There's never really an ending. There's just a transformation.
Right. Right.
I'm curious, what energetically, what did this guy feel like being in his presence?
Okay, now the day that he was coming, there were 12 of us who had signed up for this healing session.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered to myself, we were all sitting there kind of meditating in this room till he got there. Two men I didn't know, I had never met, went to the airport to get him, and his plane was late. And I sat there wondering if I would know which one he was when he walked in. Well, three guys walk in. One was short, and he walked with an incredibly smooth glide. And he did feel different energetically to someone like me. He was short. He had a high forehead. And like I said, he spoke with an unusual lisp. But the most remarkable thing to me is when they went into the living room and he stood in front of the sliding glass doors with the bright New Mexico light out behind him, what stood out to me was his aura was not like anyone else's. Around him was a dark void, and it baffled me because there was nothing, no feeling of negativity about him, and yet there was this dark, strange void around him. And years later, I realized that it was just because his energy was so different, and maybe it was that it was so different that even someone sensitive couldn't pick up on it, or maybe it really did look like a dark void. But he did have a different feeling to him than for someone sensitive like me than other people, and also looked different because of his aura.
I know a lot of the experiences here with people when the ships fly over and they power up and light up, everybody gets really giddy. You feel this just total bliss hit, like a connection happens or an energetic kind of a signature happens or transference, which is really interesting. And you actually feel these ships way before you see them. You know, something in you just feel this energy come in, your body will start tingling everywhere, and you go, what's going on? And all of a sudden you turn around and there's the ship, you know, flying over. So that's one of the reasons why I was asking that question, because usually you feel that when you get a really higher dimensional being or, you know, an off-worlder coming in, and it's a benevolent one, a lot of times you really feel the energetics of them, you know, of them appearing in your area.
Right. Right, yes, I did feel a difference. Mm-hmm. It was a slight difference.
Yeah, and if they're doing healing work too, that's a good indicator. I know there's a lot of people that seem like they can just reach right into you and pull things out, you know, doing the psychic surgery and things of that nature.
Right, that's what he did. The first thing in the session was he massaged my eyes. And then before I knew it, his fingers were going right into my eyes, and you couldn't help but flinch because it was just a reflex reaction. Mm-hmm. And he said, don't flinch and it won't hurt. But, you know, it's easier said than done because, like I said, it's just an automatic reflex. Uh-huh. But I often wondered what the purpose of that was and what he was doing. But he also took something out. He said he took mucus out of my pancreas, and actually went into the bathroom and flushed something down the toilet.
It sounds like John of God doing, you know, one of his surgeries or whatever.
Have you ever had one with him?
No, I haven't. I have not gotten out there, unfortunately. I have a lot of friends that have been there that have actually stayed there for quite some time and had some amazing experiences, but I haven't yet. There's a few places I've been so busy with this retreat center here, I haven't been able to get out and go to, but I'm working on it. I've got a couple openings to go and see some places that are on my, you know, to-do list. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say bucket list because I don't plan on kicking the bucket. You know, so
very good.
Yeah. I plan on going into the fifth, you know, with a lot of other people. We're running up to the end of the hour here. So I wanted to, I guess the website is exploringsacredspace.com.
Right.
And so people want to get your book and read about the, and this is almost like a historical account of all some of the great minds and spiritual people and contactees that have been on the planet. It's an amazing read. And, you know, I think it would be a good one to tie in. I've always tied it all together, the ancient Egyptian, the Mayan, the UFOs, and the Bible, everything. I've tied all that in together, and it's all making sense now for me. But
it does all tie together.
Yeah. Yeah, and rather than separate into, you know, I think it's sad to see people, you know, pigeonhole things or you know, not really read, you know, if they choose a religion, then dig into it, you know, dig into the Bible. There's all kinds of encounters with UFOs in there. There's fiery chariots and the lights in the river Chebar and Ezekiel's, you know, wheel within a wheel with flashing, you know, flashing lights all around it. And, you know, all of that, when you read that, it's pretty clear what happened in the past, but we really need to go in depth into whichever book we choose, and you'll see it's replete with contact and higher beings coming in and helping out.
Right. And the reason I wrote this book is because it shares a more realistic perspective of what actually will be happening and instructions, practical instructions on how to prepare for it, for what's coming and how to understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely a must read to get through these times. And I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. But unfortunately, we're out of time, so we've got to sign off.
Well, thank you, James, and take care. Have a nice evening.
All right, you too. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.